Then from 17 to 35, this will be specifically describing karma yoga or detached work, particularly with the stress on setting the example. Then the last section will be from 36 to 43 till the end of the chapter. And there we are going to hear of the two things, lust and anger. In other words, these are the things which need to be purified and which are being purified by the process of yoga. The purification which is required. These things stand as an obstacle to our relationship with Krishna, and they need to be purified. Thank you. Very nice script. We will remember. So yesterday we began this chapter with Arjun seeing confused, seeing ambiguity in the explanations that Krishna gave. And he asked questions to clear his doubts. When he heard from Krishna about sense control, about the characteristics of a sthita pragya, such as this sense control, the example of the tortoise, he heard of samadhi, he heard of nirvana, and of course he heard of buddhi. So by hearing all these things, he could not understand how to match this with work. He thought that in order to achieve or do all these things, one needs to be inactive. So Prabhupada reveals the mind of Arjuna. He's asking that what is exactly this buddhi yoga that you have been speaking about? I cannot understand. And Krishna made it very clear in the first verse in his answer. What is this buddhi yoga? What did he say in the first verse, in verse 3? What is this buddhi yoga? It's karma yoga. That's what we were understanding from the beginning, even though Prabhupada was saying it's bhakti, it's bhakti, it's bhakti, it's bhakti. Krishna says it's karma yoga. That doesn't change our stand that the perfection of buddhi yoga is only achieved in bhakti yoga. So in this way, Krishna will explain that actually there are two different paths. One is the path of speculation and inactivity. What's that? A special guest. Welcome. Find yourself a seat. It's a little cold. Give her the thing. Yes. Okay, we have an honorable guest. Thank you. Good, good. Okay, now my voice will choke. So Krishna explained two classes of transcendentalists, and it's according to their natural inclination, according to their nature. Some are naturally inclined towards jnana and speculation, and some are naturally inclined towards work. And another difference between the two is that in general, those who are inclined towards gyan, they are also less submissive. They like to do things on the strength of their own intelligence and mental power. And they try to ascertain the truth by mental speculation, philosophical speculation. They study the Vedas, they accept the Vedas, but they do not immediately clearly accept the personality of Godhead. Whereas those who are inclined, who are a bit more submissive, they adopt this karma yoga, buddhi yoga, or work in devotion, accepting immediately the ruling of Vishnu and accepting to work with him as the goal, to please him, either directly or indirectly. So this was what we heard yesterday. We also heard that Prabhupada constantly says that karma yoga and buddhi yoga are the same thing. Basically, for Prabhupada, everything is the same thing. because he sees the essence. And particularly in karma yoga and jnana yoga and bhakti yoga are the same. You remember in what way they are the same? There are different steps, yes. And we said jnana yoga and bhakti yoga, in which way are they the same? Prabhupada explained that jnana yoga is a step lower and it leads to bhakti yoga. It leads to that. We gave the example of one who searches for the root of the tree and the other one who waters the root of the tree. Two different examples. So basically both are after the root of the tree. But one has found it already and the other one is still looking for it. So in this way they are same, in this way. But otherwise they are two different processes. And in karma yoga, so how is karma yoga the same as bhakti yoga? Yeah, the main thing is the acceptance of Vishnu. They work to please Vishnu by two different processes, and we are going to hear more about that. Another similarity is that they do not work, they work in a detached way. And there is a certain submissiveness and there is work. Both the karma yogi and the bhakti yogi, they work. They put all their senses into action. So Krishna's conclusion, though, was that stopping work is inferior to working with detachment. Who remembers? Why is renunciation not praised by Krishna? What are different things he said about it? Why is it not praised by Krishna, Jagat Guru? It doesn't purify the heart completely, we can say. Yeah, it doesn't purify the heart completely. And what else?
It's unnatural.
It's unnatural. Why is it unnatural?
Because the soul is very active.
The soul is an active principle. It cannot stop acting and cannot stop desiring. The Ichha Shakti, the Kriya Shakti, they are all part of the internal potency. They are part of the soul. Yes?
It's dangerous because if you take it prematurely, then it can lead to
a fall down. Yeah, it is dangerous. Premature renunciation. What means premature renunciation?
The detachment has not taken place yet.
When the detachment has not taken place, we are still in the bodily concept of life. There is one place where Prabhupada says that to take to the renounced order of life, one should not anymore see the difference between man and woman. That's where the bodily concept stands. So, yes, Apurvani?
I was going to say, have you considered also Arjuna as a Kshatriya? And Krishna is a direct instruction to Arjuna because he's a Kshatriya and he's not suitable for this.
Yes, he told him that his adhikar is to work. And we studied that before in the case of Arjuna, that being a Kshatriya, he was not allowed by the principles of this Vedic marg of gradual path, he was not allowed to take sannyas. And because the Kshatriyas are too much full of passion, for them it is very dangerous.
These instructions, they're for everybody, but they're also, you know, because it is Arjuna. Or do we consider this instruction for everybody, or we have to take into consideration Arjuna?
No, the principles are true for everybody. That as long as there is too much passion in the mind, in the body, as long as one has not become sufficiently peaceful, it is very dangerous to simply disengage the senses instead of engage. The senses should rather be engaged in a regulated way than being restricted. You remember? The restrictions, Prabhupada said, these restrictions, you know, a person in the renounced order of life should not have to restrict himself. He should naturally be renounced. When we apply restrictions, then it's like when the doctor gives you a diet. Prabhupada gives the example. Who likes the diet? Nobody likes to be restrained. But the restriction is felt when the taste for sense gratification is still there. If the taste for sense gratification is no more there, then where is the restriction? So Krishna was condemning the path actually of jnana, which entails that one takes sannyas sometimes at a very young age, because it's part of that path, without having gone through sufficient purification. He was not condemning taking sannyas in general, but immature, in an immature way. And particularly the fact that in the jnana marg, it is compulsory to take sannyas, whether you are ready for it or not. So this is a very dangerous path. Now he will give us some other, I think, which shloka did we stop on yesterday? Six? Seven? Did we do seven?
No.
Yastvindriyani manasa niyamyaravhatirjuna karmendriye karma yogam asakta savishishyate. So here Krishna declares the superiority of karma yoga over the path of inaction or jnana. He explains that the way to control the mind is to surrender to Vishnu. This is the way. The way to control the mind is not by force to try to control the activities of the mind, but is simply to engage the mind in pleasing Vishnu. So Prabhupada translates, on the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. So this is not equivocal this time. It's very clear that Krishna prefers. Karma yoga means detached work and surrender to Vishnu's order. And this is what we are going to work under authority. This is the path of karma yoga, to work under authority. And on the strength of the rules and regulations, following an authority, then we can control the mind. And the authority of the Vedas do not tell us to stop doing anything, but simply to engage the senses according to the natural propensities of each individual. This is karma yoga. Prabhupada, in some lectures, he says that in bygone ages, maybe this path of jnana and this path of yoga, meditation, could have been good. And in fact, it was followed. In Satya Yoga, everyone was performing Ashtanga Yoga. But this requires very specific conditions, which we are going to study in Chapter 6. And those conditions are not here now. It requires, first of all, sattva-guna. And this sattva-guna is not here. So here Krishna is explaining, better than inaction in Sankhya, which means stop the senses from doing anything and engage your mind in understanding the truth. Better than this is to engage the senses in action, which means here, Prabhupada will explain two different things in each purport, to engage the senses according to Varnashram, and especially for the Grihasthas. Prabhupada says that a dutiful householder who follows the activities of Varnashram and dedicates them to Lord Vishnu, he is superior to a sannyasi who is not well situated. What was the name for the sannyasi not well situated? Mithyachari. Yeah, Mithyachari. It's not a nice word. Prabhupada says it's a pretender. So, the elevation of the person, or the, how a person is nicely or badly situated on the path of spiritual realization, is not according to the external circumstances that he accepts, but it's according to the internal consciousness. And a dutiful Grihastha may have a very peaceful consciousness and is working for Lord Vishnu, is progressing very gradually. So in terms of Varnashram, he is less elevated than a sannyasi who has renounced everything. But if the sannyasi, after renouncing, his mind is wheeling round and contemplating sense gratification, then he is lower than the Grihastha. So this is the verdict here of Prabhupada. We have to make Vishnu the goal and engage our senses. So to make Vishnu the goal means that there has to be an intention to please him. And this will help us control our mind. So Prabhupada is explaining here that there are two ways to do that. He says, the prime swartha gati, or goal of self-interest. Swartha means self-interest and gati means the goal. So the prime goal of self-interest is to reach Vishnu. The whole institution of Varna and Ashram is designed to help us reach this goal of life. So how do we reach Vishnu? Prabhupada says it is by following the institution of Varna and Ashram. Okay. Now in the next sentence, Prabhupada says, a householder can also reach this destination by regulated service in Krishna consciousness. So even though Srila Prabhupada repeatedly says that Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga are the same, he also makes the distinction from time to time, that these are two different ways to do things. So the idea is a Grihastha, particularly in this case here, can go by his work for maintenance according to the activities of Varnashram in whatever section of the society he finds himself. Or Prabhupada said he can even do any kind of modern work. So there is work. Either it's according to Varnashram and many regulations of the Vedic literature, or it's any type of modern work. And then side by side, one should also practice the activities of Navavida Bhakti. Srila Prabhupada will stress in all the purports that are coming that in this age, even if we adopt the principles of Varnashram, the way to actually sacrifice is not to follow the Karmakanda and it's not to do all the yagyas to Vishnu, but the way to sacrifice is to practice the ninefold Navavida Bhakti and serve Krishna directly. And some people may follow, may decide to serve Krishna directly through their work also, to simply serve Krishna and not be engaged in the activities of maintenance. So these are two different paths that one may take. Is either you perform some work and you practice Krishna consciousness at the same time, or you decide to only practice Krishna consciousness, which means to be directly engaged in preaching, in serving, in some capacity. And both the types of people are doing the Sankirtan Yagya. Prabhupada writes in the end of the purport, for self-realization, one can live a controlled life. So what is important? That there should be a system of controlling, regulating our life. Whether we choose to do that through the activities according to our natures, engage in maintaining our family, working and so on, or if we choose to directly serve Krishna, there has to be a system of regulation. So for self-realization, one can live a controlled life as prescribed in the Shastras and continue carrying out his business without attachment, and that way make progress. A sincere person who follows this method is far better situated than the false pretender who adopts show bottle spiritualism to cheat the innocent public. So Prabhupada gives two strong sentences here. He says that those who stop working and put on the dress of spiritualists and who are pretenders, this is compared to show bottle. You know show bottle? What is a show bottle? Yeah, so they do that in the shops where they sell whatever, medicines or some little thing. So they put a bottle there with the name of the product, but inside there's nothing. It's called a show bottle. Then the next sentence, Prabhupada is similarly strong. He says, a sincere sweeper in the street is far better than the charlatan meditator who meditates only for the sake of making a living. So Prabhupada is leading into the next shloka that Krishna is going to explain, that sannyas or renunciation should not be taken up to fill the belly as an excuse not to work. So what is the important thing regarding following either karma yoga or Krishna consciousness? There is one word here which is very important that Prabhupada has put in his translation, and he has put that also in the purport. Sincerity, yes. This is the word here. Sincerity, as opposed to the mityachari, who is not a sincere person. just interested in something external. So in whatever work we do, in whatever endeavor, we need to be sincere. And Prabhupada said he should just try to control the senses. And by sincerely trying, the purification will take place. There may not always be success. The path of elevation goes through many ups and downs. We try to control the senses. One day we succeed, the next day we don't succeed. But the important is that the sincerity should be there, that we want to please Lord Vishnu. We want a spiritual goal in our life. Someone had a question, Rukmini? It's going to become more apparent when we come, when we read. See, okay. We will read some things about that. As we said before, Karma Yoga is a certain system which follows a certain type of scriptures. It follows the karma section of the Vedas. You divide the society in four varnas, four ashrams, and all of them have different duties. And specifically, and their duties refer to the way they live, the way they maintain their body, the type of sacrifice that they do, and so on. And this is all indicated in the scriptures. The purificatory processes that they follow, it's all different. For if you are a brahmachari, or if you are a grihastha, or you are a vaishya, or you are a kshatriya, you do different activities, you perform different works to maintain yourself, you have different responsibilities, you have to perform different yagyas, and so on. And it follows the karma section of the Vedas. Okay, as a scripture, it follows the Dharma Shastras also. So, and the goal should be, and so there are two sections in them. One is the karmis who follow these things just to enjoy, and there are the karma yogis who follow the same things but to achieve Vishnu, to please Him. Okay, Bhakti Yoga follows different scriptures. The Bhakti Yogis, and it is said, you know, the Karma Yogis, the Karmis, they are in the bodily concept of life. That's why they are strictly divided into four ashrams, four vanas, because they are fully identified with their tendencies, their propensities, their bodies, and they work accordingly. Right? And when one actually becomes more, and by following this system that Krishna has established in the Vedas, one gradually awakens in consciousness. The goodness becomes prominent. And when one comes in contact with the path of devotional service, one is actually able to understand it and to take it up. And the path of devotional service begins when, first of all, we understand ourselves not to be this body. This is the first lesson, that we are not this body, and therefore there is a direct relationship between the soul and God and Krishna. And the activities of Bhakti Yoga are, Prabhupada will say in the next purport, that either you serve Vishnu through the yagyas, you know, you obey Him through the yagyas, that's an indirect way to please Him. And or you serve Him directly. So to serve Him directly, that is Bhakti Yoga. When we have Krishna on the altar, yesterday I said, instead of offering Him a bag of grains, you know, with some swaha, or to feed Him through the fire, you cook for Him. You do things nicely for Him in a personal way. There will be a purport by Prabhupada where he explains also the intention is different. The Karma Yogis, they just want to purify themselves. They want to achieve self-realization. They want to advance. The Bhakti Yogis simply love Krishna. it is different. In Bhakti Yoga, there is a personal relationship with Krishna. And the process is different in the sense that in Karma Yoga, you do all your Varnashram activities for the maintenance of your family, your country, your nation, your society, whatever. And when, after it's done, right, you offer it to Vishnu. Some of it or the whole of it. You understand? So Prabhupada explains that Bhakti Yoga is not like this. Bhakti Yoga is first you put yourself in the consciousness that you are Krishna's servant before acting, not after. So that is, it's a completely different, it's a different level of consciousness altogether. We are devotees of Krishna means we are servants of Krishna. And we do not do the activities of whatever we want to do, whatever we like to do, but we actually act according to the direction of the spiritual master, the direction of Krishna. And our intention is to please him, but him for his benefit. I will read you that purport, you'll understand. Prabhupada explains it very nicely. Whereas the karma yogi, he does it to please Vishnu, but ultimately for whom is it? It's for him. So it is a little different. This is what Prabhupada says here. It's a very interesting quote. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5, 23-24. Prabhupada writes, a pure devotee is interested only in devotional service, not in material affairs. So material affairs always mean something you do for yourself, for your maintenance, for, you know, you do it for yourself. And devotional service is something that you do for Krishna. Like you worship the deity, you worship the deity, it's for Krishna. Right? You chant Hare Krishna, it's for pleasing Krishna. This is devotional service. To execute devotional service, one should always engage in hearing and chanting about Krishna or Lord Vishnu. Vishnu and Krishna are the same person. But there also there is a difference. Because Krishna is the original Lord who lives in the spiritual world. And we are worshipping that Lord. Whereas Vishnu is the Paramatma who supervises this material world, which is like a jail. It's an expansion of Krishna. One should have complete faith in the words of Krishna, who says that he is the great well-wishing friend of everyone. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. A devotee considers Krishna the only friend. Pumsar Pita Vishnu. The word Pumsa means by all living entities. There are no distinctions permitting only a man or only a brahmana to offer devotional service to the Lord. Everyone can do so, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Striyo Vaishyas Tata Shudra Tepi Yanti Param Gatim. Although women, Vaishyas and Shudras are considered less intelligent, they also can become devotees and return home, back to Godhead. So devotional service is the engagement of everyone because it's the engagement of the soul. Everyone does kirtan. Everyone does whatever we do in Krishna consciousness. But when you go by the path of karma yoga, not everyone does the same thing. If you are a brahmachari, you do one type of thing. If you are a grihastha, you do another type of thing. After performing sacrifices, sometimes a person engaged in fruitive activity customarily offers the results to Vishnu. Now we are talking of those who follow the path of Karma Yoga. After performing sacrifices, sometimes a person engaged in fruitive activity customarily offers the results to Vishnu. But here it is said, Bhagavat Yadha, one must directly offer everything to Vishnu. This is called sannyas. A Tridandi sannyasi carries three dandas, signifying kaya, mano, vakya, body, mind, and words. All of these should be offered to Vishnu first, and then one can begin devotional service. So first we offer ourselves in Bhakti Yoga. We offer ourselves as a servant of the Lord, and then we do what He wants to do, what He wants us to do. Fruitive workers first perform some pious activities and then formally or officially offer the results to Vishnu. The real devotee, however, first offers his surrender to Krishna with his body, mind, and words, and then uses his body, mind, and words for the service of Krishna as Krishna desires. Are you getting some indication of what's the difference between the two?
When you consider the whole material world, all in the nature of the person, then one is approaching God through, one is approaching God through his nature and his inclinations and dealing with his material conditioning, you know? And the other one is understanding that you are an eternal servant of Krishna,
right,
who you are eternally related from the spiritual angle, and that your eternal service is to engage in love and devotional service to Krishna. So one is like materially considerate, more materially considerate, the other is more spiritually considerate.
Hmm. And because he is more materially engrossed, he is also more egoistic. He's trying, in a submissive spirit, he follows the Shastra to offer the things to Vishnu. But his prime interest is still to maintain his body, to maintain his... Because he hasn't yet understood that actually I'm not this body. Right. Whereas the devotee has already understood to a much greater extent. Huh? And therefore he wants to develop a relationship with Krishna. And he doesn't just do what his nature wants him to do, or what his family wants him to do, or what his society wants him to do, or what he wants to do, but he actually tries to understand, what is it that Krishna wants me to do? This is the big difference. To try to understand what Krishna wants me to do. This is what we said, vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kuru nandana. To follow the instructions of the spiritual master. When we come to that stage where we actually hand over our will to the spiritual master. Very difficult. Yes. But that is Bhakti Yoga. The understanding that he is the representative of the supreme will. And our will is only going to lead us to hell or some nearby places. Let Vikas speak.
Somebody is a sannyasi, because he becomes sannyasi by following this Varnashram system. Is he 100% Krishna conscious, or is he same, like, coming to the level of devotion service, or he is like...
No, it depends. It depends on the evolution of... There are Mayavadi sannyasis, Krishna conscious sannyasis.
He established...
We will see. Krishna is going to take us through that. At some point, when the karma yogi understands actually that he is not the body, then he takes up either Gyan Marg or Ashtanga Marg. And the one who takes to Gyan Marg may develop impersonalism. But the one who takes to Ashtanga Marg, which is what Krishna recommends, he says first karma, then karma yoga, then Ashtanga Yoga. Because in Ashtanga Yoga, there is meditation on Vishnu. It's the same line. It's the recommended path. So you meditate on Vishnu, then he becomes a personalist. And if he's fortunate enough, at some point he understands through the mercy of some devotees, and he becomes a devotee and takes up bhakti yoga. But there are gyans, marg sannyasis also, and most of them are brahmavadis or mayavadis, meaning they don't, they are impersonalist.
Then how it is almost that we can even follow Varnashram system also, it is also like further process of further education. Like there is a chance of later to become impersonalist.
The Varnashram system is followed by everybody, but the systems of advancement it's followed by everybody. But even the devotees, they follow the four Varnas and the four ashrams. Like Grihasthas, for example, you have a job, so that's your Varna. But in Kali Yoga, everything is upside down, so it may not be a traditional occupation, what you are doing. It's some kind of business. So it's some kind of Vaishya activity. So that's the Varna. So you are following your duties. What is your duty? Your duty is to maintain your family. That is your duty. Yes. So there is, in each person's life, there are two sides. One is material side. We heard that two swadharmas. One is the material side. One is the spiritual side. So from the material point of view, you have a family. You have to maintain your family. And you have chosen to have a job. So you are following Varnashram. You are a Grihastha, that's your ashram. And you are doing business, that's your Varna. Right. And for as far as the yagya, you are performing some kirtan yagya, because that's the yagya for this age. And you are a bhakti yogi, you're not a karma yogi. Even though you follow some varnashram, you're not a karma yogi, you're a bhakti yogi. Right? But there will be some other devotees, like some who are here, like Akin Chana, okay. He does full-time devotional service. He doesn't have to bother about his maintenance. He doesn't have to work for his maintenance. So this is a different path. So in terms of yagya, he's doing the same. Sankirtan yagya. He's following the same process. He's following the same sadhana. He's following everything. But he doesn't have to bother for his maintenance, because he's a brahmachari, but not just brahmachari, he's a brahmachari full-time in the temple, right? You're doing that. So in this way, I said, there are different ways to follow. So he's also in Varnashram, following this brahmachari, that's one of the ashrams. But he's fully involved in Krishna's service. And in your life, there are two sides.
My point is that why is there so much stress for me going performing this karma yoga process if somebody is not in?
Yeah, because you have only two choices. Either it's devotional service or karma yoga. Otherwise it is vikarma. Either you serve Lord Vishnu directly or indirectly. No, not if you follow actually what Krishna says. Krishna will say it's karma yoga, then Ashtanga, then this and that. But what Krishna will say in the end is, don't do that. Just do devotional service and don't get confused. This is what Krishna says in the end. That you should just serve Him. Try to come to that level of serving Krishna. So we are going to continue studying this. It is very difficult to understand the distinction between the two. The mentality is different, and to some extent, to a great extent, the activities are also different. Should we continue?
Yeah.
In text 8, Krishna is going to give us another reason why we should work if we were not convinced. Niyatam kuru karma tvam karma jhyayo hyakarmana sharira yatrapi chate na prasidhye na karmana. Perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. So what is the idea here? Why we should work? Because the body needs maintenance. First maintenance is the food. Food has to come from somewhere. And unless you live in a paradise somewhere in the heavenly planets, you can just pick the fruit everywhere. You sit under the tree, you say, oh, today I would like mangoes. And the mangoes arrive. But for those who have taken place in this karma bhumi, the trees hardly give shade. What to speak of fruit? And so if you want a tree here, you have to plant it. Right? So to plant the tree, that is work. And sannyasis don't plant trees, they live under the tree. So, but in general, we need food, we need clothing, we need shelter, we need maintenance. So the question is, who is ready to live like this? If you want the house, if you want the food, nice, at least 3-4 chapatis with the ghee on top, if you want that, then you have to work. You cannot just expect that somebody else is going to give it to you. The work has to be there. And if only those who can avoid this kind of needs, if they are able, one who takes to the renounced order of life or the path of Gyan, he has to be able to live under the tree without the roof, to eat the chapatis without the ghee. We saw that in the 6 Goswamis of Vrindavan, right? They would just beg little flour somewhere and they would make the balls. They wouldn't even flatten it and make a chapati. They just make the balls. Some days, you know, they would just pop the balls uncooked like this and eat them up. And some other days they would make a fire and they would put the balls in the fire and it would cook. And then they would eat that. So who is ready to live like this? Krishna is questioning. Means that the senses have to be... Bhishma is worried already. We are not ready to live like this. Another aspect of sannyas life is that it's very austere. And of course here we are talking of those who follow this varnashram marg, the Vedic marg. Their sannyas is very austere. In devotional services, we know it's much less austere. It's not, this kind of difficulty is not there, but still, a sannyasi is not supposed to have property, is not supposed to stay always in the same place unless he has taken an order to do so or has taken a vow to do so. A sannyasi is to travel all the time, whether he likes it or not, whether it's raining or whether, you know. So there are many austerities. Who is ready? So here Krishna is saying that you should not become a beggar just to live at the cost of others. Renunciation for the purpose of maintenance is never approved by the Lord. In the 18th chapter, Krishna is going to discuss many things in the three modes, and he will discuss renunciation in the three modes. People renounce the world for different reasons. So Krishna is pointing out here, renunciation is for the attainment of Lord Vishnu. But there are many other reasons why people renounce. What could be some reasons why people renounce the world? One time, one lady, she told me, "I did not renounce the world. The world renounced me." That was a little sad. So some people are renounced by force, because somehow they could never get married, or they could never get rich, or they could never nothing. So by force, the world renounced me, so I'm renounced. What to do? It's like that. What are some other reasons? This is what Krishna is condemning, is escapism. They just don't want to face the reality of the responsibilities of material life. You know, you have to have a family and then the children and the house and the life insurance and the car and the this and that. And you have to have a job. You have to come up with the maintenance every month. So some people think, woohoo. So it's okay to think like this, that I will not be involved in this. It's very much okay. But is the mind peaceful? Meaning, if you don't do all these things, are you ready to live without the ghee and the chapatis? So Krishna is pointing out this, that if you want, if the mentality to enjoy is still there, then be ready to work. Once the mentality to enjoy is purified, then, okay, very nice. It's very nice to be free from material obligation. What are some other reasons besides escapism and the world renounced me? To make a living. Yes, some people are lazy, simply lazy. So instead of working, you just figure out on which day my neighbor is getting his pay. And that day you go there and ask him for a share. You know? And if he's generous, he will give some. But this is actually vikarma. Because begging, you know, there should be something given in return. Sannyasis are supposed to give knowledge. In fact, the sannyasis, they don't go from door to beg, to take. They go there to give. So to give knowledge and give the opportunity to the grihasthas to give donations, to get rid of their karma, it's one of their yagyas. They have to give in charity to the renounced order. So they're actually going in a, it's a service that they do to the grihasthas. It's auspicious for them. What are some other reasons? Yes? To become famous, to become worshipped. Yeah, because, again, renunciation usually is praised in the world. People have some esteem because it is an achievement. If someone can be renounced, it is a great achievement. To be free from material desires, to be free from the greatest enemy of lust, this is a great achievement. This is the result of many lifetimes of purification. So therefore, people will appreciate. They will worship. So some people will just want the worship part, knowing that I will get worship, I will get, you know, praised, I will get honor, pratishta. So these are all wrong reasons. And so he's warning Arjuna that why are you wanting to take sannyas? And in Arjuna's case, was to avoid the inconvenience of work. Because his work involved killing his relatives. And that he didn't like. So to avoid, it was escapism. We read it in one of the purports yesterday. He skillfully wanted to avoid the fight. That was in his case what it was. Prabhupada says, Work should not be given up capriciously without purification of materialistic propensities. Anyone who is in the material world is certainly possessed of the impure propensity for lording it over material nature, or in other words, for sense gratification. Such polluted propensities have to be cleared. Without doing so, through prescribed duties, one should never attempt to become a so-called transcendentalist, renouncing work and living at the cost of others. So whether we follow the path of karma yoga or the path of bhakti, we are going through a gradual purification of this enjoying propensity. Text 9. Now Krishna is going to make it very clear. It's actually his conclusion here. He's going to make it very clear that work has to be done for Vishnu. And this is the idea of Nishkam Karma Yoga or Buddhi Yoga. Work with knowledge. And this is also the recipe how to become free from the bondage of work. So here is what he says. Nyagnyartat karmanonyatra lokoyam karma bandhanaha tadartham karma kanteya mukta sangha samachara. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage. So Krishna explains the purpose of the work, yagya artat. Art is the purpose. For the purpose of yajna, we should act in the spirit of sacrifice. We should not act for sense gratification. And here, yajna, Prabhupada translates as Vishnu. Yajna means sacrifice, but yajna is also the Lord of sacrifice. So ultimately, we should work for the Lord of sacrifice. Sacrifice means, we said, to give up something small to get something bigger. Give up something inferior to get something greater. So we sacrifice, we let go of the fruit of the activities to Lord Vishnu. And here he says very clearly that when you sacrifice to Vishnu, not to the poor, you know, not to the needy or something. This is a different thing. When you feed the poor, you give money to the needy, that doesn't count as sacrifice for Vishnu. This is punya karma. This is a pious activity, the result of which will be that we will take birth again and get some result out of that, some good birth, some more money. So this is not what Krishna is recommending. If you want to give, give to Vishnu. Do the yajnas for his satisfaction. Give to the brahmanas, give to the temples. This is the way to perform karma yoga. And what will be the result of this? The result will be mukta sangha, which means freedom from good and bad reactions. And Prabhupada says there will be an extra result This is one result, mukta sangha, freedom from action and from the reactions, whether good or bad. But there will be an extra result, Srila Prabhupada says, and this is that gradually we will be elevated to understanding Krishna and His service particularly, His personal service. There will be a gradual elevation to devotional service. So let us look at what Prabhupada says here. Again, he will make the distinction here between the karma and the bhakti. He says, all sacrificial performances also are meant for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. The Vedas enjoin yagyo vai Vishnu. In other words, the same purpose is served whether one performs prescribed yagyas or directly serves Lord Vishnu. So what are these two different things here? Whether one performs yagyas, it's karma yoga, or directly serves Lord Vishnu, that is devotional service. Krishna consciousness is therefore performance of yagya as it is described in this verse. So Prabhupada explained that this verse is actually the spirit of Krishna consciousness. It's true, it's the same, it is the same principle. It's for the pleasure of Vishnu. Therefore, one has to work for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Any other work done in this material world will be a cause of bondage. For both good and evil work have their reaction, and any reaction binds the performer. Therefore, so you see two conclusions. What was the first one we just read? Therefore, one has to work for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Any other work done in this material world will be a cause of bondage, for both good and evil work have their reactions. And any reaction binds the performer. So he's encouraging to actually follow the process of karma yoga. You have to sacrifice for Vishnu. Then Prabhupada says, therefore, one has to work in Krishna consciousness to satisfy Krishna or Vishnu. And while performing such activities, one is in a liberated stage. Bhakti yoga is a higher platform. One should therefore act very diligently under the expert guidance of a devotee of Lord Krishna or under the direct instruction of Lord Krishna himself. This sentence needs to be understood properly. What could be misunderstood in this sentence? Because he put or there, but or has two different meanings, right? Editorji, or can mean, or means two different things, or it can also mean and, right? It's either this or that, or it's both, it's like that. So this one is, what does it mean? Act under the expert guidance of a devotee of Lord Krishna or under the direct instruction of Lord Krishna himself. Is that two different things? Non-different. Yes, in here it doesn't mean that they are two different things. It's the same thing. Yes, it means the same thing. The essence of all this is that nothing should be performed for sense gratification, but everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. This practice will not only save one from the reaction of work, but also gradually elevate one to transcendental loving service of the Lord, which alone can raise one to the kingdom of God. So whatever we are doing, one who is doing karma yoga gradually will come to Krishna consciousness. And those who are doing, who are following the path of Krishna consciousness already, who are personally serving Vishnu, for them the result will be transcendental devotional service. So these are different levels that are, we go up, up, up the scale here, the yoga ladder, it's called. The karma yogis gradually become devotees, and the devotees who endeavor through their own process of devotional service to serve, they advance in devotional service and they attain transcendental devotional service, which means bhav, bhakti, and so on. And in this way, they enter the kingdom of God. Sahayagya prajashristva purovacha prajapatihi anena prasavishyadvam eshavostvishtaka madhuk. Okay, so here begins a description of how, of the system, the Vedic system of elevation, beginning with karma, karma kanda section, which prescribes sacrifice to the demigods. So let us see what is the spirit here that Krishna is giving. In the beginning of creation, so he's saying, he's giving, this is the Vedic process which is given at the beginning of creation. The Lord of all creatures, which is here, Prajapati, the Prajapati. Of course, some people will interpret this as being someone else, Prajapati, one of the demigods, Prajapatis, one of the Prajapatis, Brahma is Prajapati, so many Prajapatis. But Prabhupada explains that Prajapati originally, aham bija pradapita, and the Prajapati, the Lord of all creatures, the Lord of all beauties, the Lord of everything, who is that? That is Krishna. He quotes another verse here. Shriyapatir yagyapati prajapatir dhiyampatir lokapatir dharapati patir gatis chandaka vrishnisatvatam prasidatam me bhagavan satanpatihi. The Prajapati is Lord Vishnu. The Lord created this material world. So here, this is Krishna who is himself speaking. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of prajas. And prajas means generations. And Srila Prabhupada clarifies what are these prajas. He says, of men and demigods. This is not in the Sanskrit. Prabhupada makes it very clear for our understanding. He sent forth men and demigods along with sacrifices. And Prabhupada says, for Vishnu. But this section here is sacrifices for demigods. However, Vishnu always is the predominating deity in all sacrifices, even the sacrifices to the demigods. So ultimately the sacrifices are for Vishnu. And bless them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna, sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So this and achieving liberation, I'm not sure, this is not directly in the Sanskrit. Ishta kama dhuk. Ishta kama dhuk, meaning that the Lord is the bestower of all desirable things. So, knowing that the living entities in the material world have material desires, they want to enjoy. So the Lord actually creates this world for this. This world is created for two different purposes, which are ultimately one. There's only one purpose, is to bring us back to Krishna. But there are two purposes in the creation. What are the purposes? To facilitate our enjoying spirit. Krishna is very kind. You know, he does not impose his rule over us if we don't want it. This is the main characteristic of the jiva, is the jiva has free will. You studied this in the Ishopanishad. The jiva has free will, and the jiva is not, although we call ourselves dasa, we are not slaves in the sense that we cannot say no, we are forced. Krishna doesn't force. So, if we want to enjoy separately, Krishna fulfills our desire and he creates this world. So this world is meant to provide a chance for us to enjoy. And that chance to enjoy, either, and then there are, then comes different system. Either we can enjoy freely, the way we want, whatever we do, do just whatever you like. But this is called vikarma. And so, when we do vikarma, suffering ensues. So Krishna gives, in the beginning of the world, he gives the Vedic Shastras, and there he gives the system of karma and up. And the system of karma means that you enjoy. He presents himself as Ishta Kama Duk. He is the figure that can fulfill all your material desires. You just come, you do this yagya, you do that yagya, you follow this karma, you do this and you will get everything, everything you like. So this is his system, to try to elevate us. It's a system of yagyas, which are going to... Actually what he does is that he takes advantage of our an enjoymentality. But his purpose is another. We want to enjoy, so he made the world. But what is Krishna's purpose? To take us back home. And why is that? Is it that he wants to overrule us? You say, no, now he wants to overrule us. We are happy here. Why he wants to take us back? No, it's because we want to enjoy. And here is not possible full enjoyment. Krishna knows everything. He is Purnam. He knows that the perfection is when we interact with him. When we serve him, when we interact with him, this is when we get maximum enjoyment. So he wants to fulfill our ultimate desire to be the most happy as possible. And that's possible only when we agree to serve him and when we lovingly have our exchanges with him. So this is his purpose, to give us the maximum. So bring us back to him. And in order to bring us back, he's going to try to reform our independent mentality in a very skillful way. If you want to do whatever you like, you do it. Responsibility is yours. You might go to hell. What to do? Because the world works in a certain way and there is a chance of degradation. Now, if you want to agree, you want to enjoy, come here. There is the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. You come here and you follow the system of yagyas. This is a stepping stone, Srila Prabhupada says. The Vedas are not meant actually to facilitate the material desires of the living entities. But they use the desire to enjoy to get the living entity to follow, to surrender, to follow the Vedas. And once we begin to follow, then we get hooked into the system. First of all, there is surrender. So Krishna rewards. Oh, nice, he surrendered. Okay. He rewards us. So, and the purification takes place because of the contact, first of all, the surrender to the Vedas and the contact with the Yajñapati. That we actually, he is the ultimate beneficiary. Srila Prabhupada says, the material creation by the Lord of creatures is a chance offered to the conditioned soul to come back home, back to Godhead. The Lord created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajñas for the satisfaction of Vishnu, so that while in the material world they can live very comfortably without anxiety, and after finishing the present material body, they can enter into the kingdom of God. So you note that this is very much the beginning here of a very important theme in the Bhagavad Gita, which is the worship of the demigods. It begins with this section here. By performance of yajna, the conditioned souls gradually become Krishna conscious and become godly in all respects. So this is the gradual path. Okay? And next, Srila Prabhupada makes it clear that in this age, however, we perform the Sankirtan yajna. Other yajnas prescribed in the Vedic literature are not easy to perform in the age of Kali, but the Sankirtan yajna is easy and sublime for all purposes. And Srila Prabhupada was very expert at seeing this spirit of sacrifice manifest in the Sankirtan movement. For example, in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.2.12, he says, trees also should be given protection. He's talking of the duties of the Kshatriyas. The cutting of trees is prohibited unless necessary for the service of Lord Vishnu. So the governments are supposed to protect the trees. But if the paper mills stop producing paper, one may argue, how can our ISKCON literature be published? The answer is that the paper mills should manufacture paper only for the publication of ISKCON literature. Because ISKCON literature is published for the service of Lord Vishnu. This literature clarifies our relationship with Lord Vishnu, and therefore the publication of ISKCON literature is the performance of yajna. Yajñartad karmanonyatra lokoyam karma bandhanaha. Yajna must be performed as indicated by the superior authorities. The cutting of trees simply to manufacture paper for the publication of unwanted literature is the greatest sinful act. So those who have paper mills to produce newspapers, they don't know what they're doing. It's actually not a good activity. Then another way of performing the Sankirtan, of doing yajna, you know, Prabhupada is trying to be practical and making it clear in the Bhagavad Gita. You will see now in these verses, in verse 10, in verse 12, then 13, 14, 15, in each and every purport, Srila Prabhupada makes it clear that in this age, we are following the Sankirtan yajna. We don't have to follow any other yajna. We may be a brahmachari, we may be a grihastha, we may be a vaishya, we may be a kshatriya. These things, this is the external, you know, social part of our life. But as far as practicing the yajna, it is Sankirtan yajna. Prabhupada says, the entire Vedic civilization aims at satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this age of Kali, one can achieve the same goal by performing Sankirtan Yajna. Therefore, one who has education and wealth must use them to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by helping the Sankirtan movement that has already begun. The Hare Krishna movement, or Krishna consciousness movement, all educated and wealthy persons must join this movement, since money and education are meant for service to the Lord. If money and education are not engaged in the service of the Lord, these valuable assets must be engaged in the service of Maya. So, meaning if one is has the ability to teach, is a teacher, education, and if one has a school, then it should be for the purpose of teaching Krishna consciousness. And if one has money, then it should be used to propagate the Sankirtan movement. Another type of yajna. Although sacrifice may be offered to please Krishna, he is more pleased when grains and ghee, instead of being offered in the fire, are prepared as prasadam and distributed. So this is the difference between the two processes of yajna. One is just the grains and the ghee, swaha, swaha. Where is the love there? Where is the personal relationships? This is the yajna of karma yoga, the path. So it should be prepared as prasad and distributed first to the brahmanas and then to others. This system pleases Krishna more than anything else. Furthermore, at the present time, there is very little chance to offer sacrifices by pouring oblations of food grains and ghee into the fire. Especially in India, there is practically no ghee. For everything that should be done with ghee, people use a certain type of oil preparation called vanaspati. Oil, however, is never recommended for offering in the sacrificial fire. In Kali Yuga, the available quantity of food grains and ghee is gradually diminishing, and people are embarrassed that they cannot produce sufficient ghee and food grains. Under the circumstances, the Shastras enjoin Yajnai Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hisumena Saha. In this age, those who are intellectual, in Bhagavatam he says, those who are intelligent, they offer yajna or perform sacrifices through the Sankirtan movement. Everyone should join the Sankirtan movement, offering to the fire of this movement. Understand? The fire of this movement is the fire. The Sankirtan movement, that is the fire. Offering to the fire of this movement the oblations of his knowledge and riches. So beautiful, Prabhupada has written. Yeah, this is 7, 14, 16, and 17. This one was 17. This is very beautifully. This kind of sacrifice, chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, and distribution of prasad is the most perfect and bona fide way of offering sacrifice for the pleasure of yajna or Vishnu. Okay. So Prabhupada will repeat that in each and every. This is mood and mission. You have to note, in terms of our aims, this is mood and mission. Krishna is giving he's explaining here the gradual elevation process, and which goes with a certain type of yajna performances. And Prabhupada is making sure that we understand that we're not going to follow that. We are going to follow the Sankirtan Yajna. Devan bhavayatanena te deva bhavayantuvaha parasparam bhavayanta shreya paramavapshyataha. The demigods, so now we get it clear, devan. The demigods, being pleased or nourished by sacrifices, will also please you. And thus, by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. So again here, what is the promise?
Prosperity.
There is a promise of sense gratification. And what is the system? It is the yajna to the devatas. And it is a system, it is a universal system for the universe to carry on. There is a cooperation, Prabhupada says, between the demigods who exist on the subtle platform and the human beings who exist here in Karma Bhuni on the gross platform. Like last time, you remember, when we were talking of the Shraddh ceremony, worship of the forefathers, somebody said, there was a man who said, a scientist who said, how can come someone upstairs eat the meal that's served downstairs? So again here, nowadays people don't understand. But when we do sacrifices to the demigods, they actually get it. They eat on the subtle platform. They get nourishment, they get strength from the yajnas. In the yajnas, we chant the mantras and we offer different food, grains and so on. And the devata that is being worshipped, he accepts the offerings on the subtle platforms, and that gives strength to the devatas. And with that strength, they manage the activities of the world. And they favor particularly those who perform the yajnas. They will give the power to see, the power to smell, they will give prosperity, they will give the light, they will give the rain. So, you will see in Srimad Bhagavatam, when you study in the second canto, there is a very complicated explanation of the intricate relationship, a triangle between the conditioned living entity, the gross body, and the devatas, and how all the three are interdependent. They are not independent. The demigods are not independent. Although they are controllers in comparison to us, they control the material nature, but they only control a certain portion of the material nature. And we are under the control completely of the material nature. The demigods, in general, are under the control of the three modes, but they control specific areas of the material nature. So what is... By the energy that they get from the yajnas on the subtle platform, they will maintain the human beings and all the living entities on the earth by supplying water, air, sense power, and so on. So who are these demigods? Srila Prabhupada begins clarifying in his purports things that in India is things that many people are totally unaware. Why are they unaware? All those people, and in India we still see the remnants up to today of the gradual path, the Vedic mark that they are following. They are worshipping the demigods. And they are following the rules of karma kanda. So, and usually, what do they think about Ganesh? Those who worship Ganesh?
Supreme personality.
He is the Supreme Lord. Right. Some think that the Supreme is sort of a Purush form, male form. Some think the Supreme is kind of female type of form. There are worshippers of Lakshmi, worshippers of Durga, the worshippers of so many. Surya Dev, and so on.
Generally, they have been Kalpakanda, we have five main devas they are worshipped. They are called Panchavas, mainly.
So the demigods, Prabhupada clarifies, you're smashing all the Hindustani beliefs. Prabhupada exposes ignorance. The demigods are empowered administrators of material affairs. They supply air, light, water, and all other benedictions for maintaining the body and soul of every living entity. They are innumerable assistants in different parts of the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the entire universe is considered to be an expansion of the body of Lord Vishnu. And the demigods are considered to be different parts of his body. Some are in the arms, some are in the belly, some are in the head, some are in the legs. But what is very important to understand, that even the Karmakandis who worship the demigods, when they do the yajñas, at least at that time, Lord Vishnu is worshipped in all yajñas as the chief beneficiary. Therefore, ultimate satisfaction of the yajñapati is the chief purpose of all the yajñas. So, what happens in the yajñas is, on one hand, by worship of the demigods, they get material prosperity, and because Vishnu is worshipped, they get purified. We don't get purified by worship of the demigods, but because Vishnu is always worshipped. So the benefit of this devata puja, first is good sense gratification. Next benefit is regulation. One has to follow some rules, some regulations. So that's a benefit of the yajñas. One gradually gets the knowledge of the soul. You remember last time I was discussing how do they understand the soul? From doing all these yajñas, how do they gradually understand that there is a soul? Achikuma?
After performing the sacrifices, the brahmanas tell them that you go to heavenly planets, and then after going to the heavenly planets, still you have to come back here and take birth, and then again you have to go back like that. And they see, then they will hear, oh, the soul is eternal.
Yeah, they understand that to go to the heavenly planet means next life. So there is, so the body that is now is not the body that's going to go to heaven. So gradually they come to understand that they are not the body. Also we saw that they develop faith. They also understand, the other thing they understand is that this earth is not the only place. They come to hear of other planets. And then one day, by hearing from the Brahmins, they also come to hear of the planets beyond the material world. So in this way, gradually, they get hooked up to a higher kind of knowledge and their desires evolve. So this is a gradual purification of the... Srila Prabhupada says something interesting here on the system of sacrifice. The system is that living beings live on the produce of grains and vegetables. And by eating such foodstuff, they get vital power of the body in the shape of blood and semen. And from blood and semen, one living being is able to create another living being. But the production of grains, grass, etc. becomes possible by rain. And this rain is made to shower properly by performance of recommended sacrifices. Such sacrifices are directed by the rites of the Vedas, namely Sama, Yajur, Rig, and Atharva. In the Manusmriti, it is recommended by offerings that by offerings of sacrifice on the altar of the fire, the sun god is pleased. When the sun god is pleased, he properly collects water from the sea, and thus sufficient clouds collect on the horizon and rains fall. After sufficient rains fall, there is sufficient production of grains for men and all animals, and thus there is energy in the living being for progressive activity. So now there is argument, well, nowadays we don't eat grains and vegetables. We eat, you know, how do they call it? Lay chips. You know this. And we eat meat. We eat meat. So people will argue. But Prabhupada says, the Melechas make plans to install slaughterhouses for killing bulls and cows along with other animals, thinking that they will prosper by increasing the number of factories and live on animal food without caring for performance of sacrifices and production of grains. Right? But they must know that even for the animals, they must produce grass and vegetables. Otherwise, the animals cannot live. But of course, in the Western world, in the slaughterhouse, they are even trying to go around this. They are feeding the cows with horrible things, including non-vegetarian things, to try to avoid this cycle here. And to produce grass for the animals, they require sufficient rains. Therefore, they have to depend ultimately on the mercy of the demigods, like the sun god, Indra and Chandra. And such demigods must be satisfied by the performances of sacrifice. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains something interesting in the purport here, is how one becomes purified by the performance of sacrifice. Did you see that? It's in the last paragraph of the purport. He talks of the, you know, the main thing is that you get sense gratification, but there are side effects, and the side effects are the main thing. The side effect of the yagyas, that's actually the main benefit. That's why in the text 11, again you will find this word Shreya, that ultimately it will bring you to the highest result. So how does it work? By performance of yagya, one's eatables become sanctified. They offer the grains, you know, the farmers, when they have any crop coming, they offer the grains, they do yagyas, there is seasonal yagyas. Every time there are crops, they have to do the yagyas, they offer the grains to Vishnu. So from this, what happens? What is the next step after you offer the yagyas, the grains? The eatables are sanctified. And this is the same process when we offer the food to Krishna. So the eatables are sanctified. Otherwise, the eatables, as we know, they are full of karma. Because whatever we eat, the grains, the vegetables, they are living entity. And it is there is a reaction, a sinful reaction for killing them. So the eatables become purified, free from all these karma, when we offer. And next, what is the third thing? By eating sanctified food, existence becomes purified. When we eat pure food, then our whole life will be pure. And then the finer tissues in the memory become sanctified. So it will actually affect us on the subtle platform. It will affect the whole constitution of the body, and especially, ultimately, it will affect the brain, and it will affect us on the subtle platform. And when the memory has become sanctified, then we can think of liberation. So this is Krishna's program. Very scientific. You offer the food, you eat pure things, your body becomes pure, then your mind becomes pure, and then you can think of liberation. Very nice. And from the external point of view, we have gone over that. How by performing the yagyas, they gradually evolve their thoughts. From 12 to 16, Krishna is going to speak of the consequences of following or not following the system. So, number 12 is not following. This system is actually compulsory. As we said in Ishopanishad, Ma Gridha Kasya Svidhanam. It's an order. It's compulsory. Ishtan Bhogan Hivo Deva Dasyante Yagya Bhavitaha Terdattana Pradayebhyo Yobhungte Stena Evasaha. So he says, in charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yagya, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. So the idea here is that in this world, we don't manufacture anything. We are not manufacturers. We just live here. We are guests. We are hosts in this world. And everything already exists, and everything is being supplied to us. The air is being supplied. Fools think, well, it's just here. But it's not just here. It's being produced at every time. It's being produced all the time. And it's produced, there is somebody behind who's producing it. So the demigods are the ones. Of course, Krishna, we know Vishnu. What does Vishnu do in the whole creation? What's the main thing he does?
Maintenance.
How does he maintain the world? Through? Yeah, but through the demigods. Demigods do all the work. And what does he do? He breathes. When he breathes out, the creation exists. When he breathes in, it is withdrawn. So he breathes in, and what else he does that maintains the world? You know?
He sanctions our weaknesses.
Yes? Super soul. Yeah, he appears within each and every atom and sustains the material energy. But there is another thing that he does constantly, without which nothing can be maintained. And this is his main work, is simply glances. This is the work of Lord Vishnu. He just glances. As long as his eyes are open and his glance is upon the material nature, everything remains active. And when he breathes in, at the same time, what does he do? He closes his eyes. And everything is withdrawn. So it's quite cool. He's lying in the ocean. And he just glances, he looks around, and all the demigods are doing the work. But the point is that the demigods are supplying, the Lord is supplying all this power that is behind the material nature, and yagya means to pay back. You have to pay back. It's like the electricity bill. You get electricity, but you have to pay the department. Prabhupada always gave that. He said, there's the light department, the sun. That's the universal light department. There is the water department. So all these departments are there, and you have to pay the bill. And that is done through the yagya. And one who doesn't perform the yagya, then he becomes a thief. So Prabhupada explains that this system of worshipping the demigods to get the supplies is for one who cannot understand what the personality of Godhead is. Those who haven't yet come to the conclusion that there is how many gods? One. There's only one God. You know, and this is what always the representatives of God come to preach. Lord Jesus, he was preaching this. There is only one God, the Father. Mahomet, he was preaching this also. There is only one God, the great Allah. And similarly, Krishna is also explaining, there are many demigods, but Vishnu is the entire body, and they are different parts of him. So they are not God, they are demigods. If we forget the purpose of human life and simply take supplies from the agents of the Lord for sense gratification and become more and more entangled in material life, which is not the purpose of creation, certainly we become thieves, and therefore we are punished by the laws of nature. Prabhupada said there will be scarcity. And scarcity on the level of the nations. Today somebody was telling me that in America, what was in America? The Social Security Fund just collapsed. You know, the Social Security means that, you know, people have been working and every month they put some money there and they think that when I'm the old, the government will maintain me. There will be scarcity. The economy of the countries will not function if there is no yagya. And within the individuals, there will be scarcity if we do not perform yagya. And what kind of scarcity? Not just it means we won't have money, but the demigods are in charge of everything in our body. There will be scarcity of light, and we won't be able to see properly. There will be scarcity of, all kinds of things. The bodies will not be developed properly. There will be scarcity in sense of intelligence, scarcity of sensory power, scarcity of everything. So this is the result of not performing yagya. That we take birth in diminished conditions because the power is not being supplied. So this is the Prabhupada explains that this worship is done according to the nature of the people. And in the scriptures, they recommend different types of worship for different types of people. Those who are in the mode of ignorance, they worship certain demigods. So Prabhupada explains, those who like to eat meat, they worship goddess Kali. And they offer meat to Kali. So and so on. So according to our nature, we will worship different demigods. In Srimad Bhagavatam, this is very nicely explained. I'll give you a little overview here. One who desires to be absorbed in the impersonal Brahmajyoti effulgence should worship the master of the Vedas, Lord Brahma, or Brihaspati. One who desires sex life should worship the heavenly king Indra. One who desires good progeny should worship the great progenitors called the Prajapatis. One who desires good fortune should worship Durga Devi. This is material fortune. One desiring to be very powerful should worship fire, Agni. One who aspires only after money should worship the Vasus. One should worship the Rudra incarnations of Lord Shiva if he wants to be a great hero. One who wants a large stock of grains should worship Mother Aditi. One who desires to attain the heavenly planet should worship the sons of Aditi. One who desires a worldly kingdom should worship Vishvadev. One who wants to be popular with the general mass of population should worship the Sadhya demigod. One who desires a long span of life should worship the Ashwini Kumaras. They are called the physicians of the demigods. One who desires stability in his post, if somebody is afraid to lose his post, should worship the horizon and the earth combined. One who desires to be beautiful should worship the beautiful residents of the Gandharva planets. One who desires a good wife should worship the Apsaras. That must be a lovely wife, this one, because one who wants a good wife should worship... there's some other things. One who desires dominion over others should worship Brahma, the head of the universe. One who desires tangible fame, you know who he should worship? This one is very nice. One who desires tangible fame, you know what is tangible? Like valuable, real fame. He should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because that's the only, you know, the only real fame is to be a devotee. Everything else is... One who desires a good bank balance, Vikas, wake up. One who desires a good bank balance should worship the demigod Varuna. If one desires to be a greatly learned man, he should worship Lord Shiva. If one desires a good marital relation, he should worship the chaste goddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. One who desires domination over a kingdom or who wants an empire should worship the Manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. One who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. You know, the moon is the source of rasa. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is from Srimad Bhagavatam 2-3. 2-10. So this is the thing here. Okay, I think we will stop here. We have overdone it for the day. Next time we will hear. There is one more point, I think, in this purport. It's the Panch Mahayagyas, what they are. And then we will continue with this here.